people running a really long way. But it's a big weekend. I don't know if you heard, but the Australian Women's Rugby Union won last night, so they're into the finals. It's excellent. Last night, the Roosters lost. Good day, even if it was the Sharks. Storm won, that's good, poor doggies. Broncos are tonight, big night. We also noticed yesterday that the rugby union, the boys lost. Ripped off, it was stolen. Umpiring, refereeing, whatever. The Broncos girls won, so they're second on the table, they're into the finals. Gold Coast is third, that's excellent. The Lions won last night. It's wrong that two Queensland teams play against each other. It's Victoria against us. And of course, Queensland State of Origin, another good win against those dirty, filthy blue people. No offence, well, maybe a little. Then of course, Brock Feeney is qualified first, so Chevy is first and second on the line today at Sandown. You following a theme? This is finals time, final season, September. And September ends with the first week in October, which is, of course, Bathurst. This is our sporting pinnacle month. Olympics, amazing. Everyone is an incredible authority on sport. How much do you know about synchronized swimming? I know everything. Diving. I can sit there and go, oh, 10 out of 10, because they were an Australian swimmers. Sport, it's so keen, so a part of who we are as Australians, a part of our culture, a part of our lives for many of us. Who played sport as a kid? I thrived on sport. I played hockey for nearly 30 years, I think. I played football, I played cricket, I played baseball, I played tennis. It was pretty much anything that wasn't academia I was into. And sport was really important to me, and sport is really important to a lot of Australia. McCrindles did some research, and basically he says that in one season, about 500,000 Australians will turn up to watch sport live. Throw in the millions of people that watch it online, on TV, on live, but also with KO through Fox Sports. Gambling, there's so much sport that's a part of who we are as a culture. Some would say that sport is Australians' main religion. And in some ways, I think it probably is. There's components that are sport that are similar to what we share in our religious practice. Music. They have their team songs, but more and more of now is there's songs during the games that are associated to different players when they score or when they do something great. There's clothing. It's really good when there's a 75% discount. There's clothing that people wear and identify, scarves and beanies, and you've seen it in the big games. The numbers of players, the participants, the crowds that come along, all decked out, all mimicking, all connecting with the identity that they have, the belonging that they have to a team. They meet in arenas, or some might say cathedrals. They have their once a week experience where they go along and support their team, their people. There's an incredible identification and a belonging to sport, to teams we have as a culture. And Paul, I think, was a bit of a sporting tragedy in the Bible, because Paul talks about sports in quite a few different ways and quite a few different times. And I want to read a few of those passages. Harry read one of those before. Thank you, Harry. It's good to see you, Harry. Two legs working. Excellent. We'll catch up after. I hate being away for 3 weeks. I forget what's going on. Philippians 3:13, brothers and sisters, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it, but one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining towards what is ahead, I press on towards the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. In 1 Corinthians 9, which Harry read out, do you know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Therefore, I do not run like someone running aimlessly. I do not fight like a boxer beating the air. No, I strike a blow to my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize. Then in 2 Timothy 2, similarly, anyone who competes as an athlete does not receive the victor's crown except by competing according to the rules. Paul talks about the Christian life, and he talks about our goals and who we are as a people, and he uses these sports analogies as a part of that. He connects sport to a journey of faith, a game to being who we are as a people, and he uses images like, firstly, running, that we don't walk, that we don't stroll, but we run. We go fast, we push hard. Striving. We don't stay within ourselves. We don't just go for the status quo, but we give it everything we have. We give it more than we think we can. Winning. Paul says that we are to win. We're not just to come second, third, or last. It's not a participant trophy. That we're to win. We're to be the ones who win the race. And he talks about endurance, pushing on, chasing the dream, chasing what God's put before us, enduring to the very, very, very end, not giving up with 5 minutes left. And he talks about understanding the rules, understanding what is right, wrong, good, bad, and working within that in order to win and get to achieve what we're called for. Sport has value in our lives. When I look at sport and what I learn through sport, I carry a lot of that into who I am at the moment in my life. One of the things is teamwork, that we are a part of a team, that we each have different skills, we have different giftings, that I as a champion can't just win the game on my own, but it takes all of us working together, working with each other, supporting each other in order to chase after the dreams that are before us. I learned perseverance, not giving up. In sport, it's easy to give up. When someone scores a goal against you, it's like, oh. When they score 3 goals, like, I'm done, why bother? Perseverance, chasing it, not letting those knockbacks stop us, but to push it on, to persevere and to endure to what is in front of us. To have a goals and a focus. When you play sport, you go on with a set understanding of how we're going to play, what strategies we're going to have. And as a church, we have strategies for seeing how we come to being God's people, how we fulfill the call God has on our life in this place. And I think probably the one thing that's most important that we're lacking most in our society, self-discipline. We are called to walk in self-discipline, to put behind those things which make us feel good, to chase on what the call is, what the goal is, to put aside feelings of comfort and feelings of pleasure, to put them aside, to chase onto what is most important. No one is going to be a great sportsman if they like to sit back, have a beer and let life go by. Being a great sportsman, it means you're applied, you chase after your dream, you sacrifice for what's in front of you. Self-discipline. Sport has lots of things that we can learn about what it is to have life, about what it is to be about a Christian, about what it is to chase after the dreams God has for us. But there is a line where sport takes over the place of God, where sport becomes an idol. And there's a place of saying, where am I? Have I got sport as an idol? Am I chasing after sport? Is it fulfilling what I'm looking for, what I need? Or is it in the way for chasing after what God has for us? Tim Keller defined idol in his book called Counterfeit Gods, and it says, an idol is anything more important to you than God, anything that absorbs your heart and imagination more than God, anything you seek to give what only God can give, anything that is so central and essential to your life that should you lose it, your life would feel hardly worth living. This morning, Dee came up and entered into the warm waters of baptism. And she was deceived because there was no warm water in there. It wasn't that cold. It definitely wasn't that warm. But beyond that, Dee came out the place to humble herself before all of us, to make a humble statement of saying, I choose to live for God. I choose to let my life down and God in my life up. You know, it's quite difficult. I think it's brave to come out and get wet in front of everybody. And Dee, I applaud you on your decision. And many of us have been through that same place of saying, God is life. God is hope. God is the be-all and end-all. God is all-supreme. And God loves me. God dies for me. God gives me hope. God gives me life. If Jesus sacrificed for me, then I can sacrifice for him. And there's other things in our lives which take that place of being most important. And for some of us, it could be sport, but I know for many of us, it's not. But there are other things that take our place. Is money something that takes the place of God? If we look at retirement, if we look at our goals, is it about having enough money to be comfortable? Is it about having enough money to get by? Do we trust in God or do we trust in money? Do we trust in finances? Do we trust in relationships? Are there certain relationships and certain people will help us to get through? They get in the way of what God is calling us into. Is it families? Is it children? Loving families and children is so important. Don't hear me wrong. It is critical. But if it comes before God, then it's in the wrong place. Is it success? Is our success more important than following God? Is it our status? Is how people see us, our reputation, more important than us giving our whole lives to God and serving him? Is it our jobs? Is it our hobbies? What is it that stands in the way of serving and loving God? You know, often it's not what we intend, but what we reflect on our lives. If we reflect back and say, what stopped me from speaking to this person about God? What stopped me from getting to church? What stopped me from getting to prayer meetings? What stopped me from going through baptism? What's stopping me from serving God with all of my heart and all of my life? Because there are things that are stopping us from giving our lives wholeheartedly to Jesus. Harry read before out of Genesis the story of Abraham, an amazing story. The story of Abraham and Isaac, and we sit down and look and say, what a callous God to go and say, kill your child. That's a little bit of background. In Genesis 12, God called Abram and said, it is time for you to leave your country, to leave your people, and to go into the great unknown. To go there, and I promise you that I will bless you. I will make you a great nation. People who bless you, I will bless. People who curse you, I will curse. I will make a great nation out of you. What a promise. Abram at that time, 75. His wife, 75. Who here, 75-ish? How excited would you be if God said, go into the great unknown. Take everything you've got. No furniture removalist. Just go. Grab a few donkeys, throw it on the back. You got a few servants, it'll all be good. Go. And you haven't got any kids, but don't worry about that. I'll build a nation out of you. Okay, ladies, 75, making babies. Yay, nay? No. No. But Abram trusted God and took off. So the story we heard of Abraham and Isaac, that was the next year, right? No. Abram went off and Lot, his nephew, came with him and they traveled for a while and they went in different directions because they saw all this land and it was great. So Lot went this way, Abram went this. They interacted with different nations and different kings, all sorts of things happened, Sodom and Gomorrah, etc., etc., etc. 15 years later, God's promise, you'll have kids. Where's that? Abram says, I know. And he fixed the problem. He hooked up with the servant girl, Hagar, and created Ishmael. Was God pleased? No. Because Abram took God's dream of what it could be and the promises that God had and said, let me help this process going. Okay, how old was they about then? About 90. God not happy. Continued on. God keeps promising Abram, I'm with you. I will bless you. I'll build a nation out of you. And eventually, along came Isaac. 99 years old, having a baby. Wow. And Abraham's focus went from God will do this. God will deliver what he's promised to being Isaac is the fulfillment of this promise. And Abram went, Isaac is the promise that God has. All of my future, all of what I have is based in Isaac, in who he is. God has given us this child to grow up, to build nation, to build blessing, to build our future. And God said, hold on. In my words, will you still love me if that wasn't there? Would you still trust me if that wasn't there? It's been 25 years of this whole process of me delivering to you this child for the promises that I have for you. Will you trust me? So Abram went up with Isaac, collected all the wood, made the altar. I can't imagine what was in Isaac's head because he knew what was happening. And then he came to realize who was being sacrificed. And at the last moment, the very last moment, God said, stop. Abram trusted God. Abram put God first. God says in Exodus that he is a jealous God. We are not to put things in front of God. God is a jealous God. And at times, God will test us to see if we're truly going to put him first. Or if there's idols that we have, there's things that stop us. What does that look like for you? We're going to watch a video in a moment. And this is a part of the Faith Runs Deep video series that we've been doing for the past few weeks. So we're going to play this video, so I want you to watch this, please.
At 15, you'd chosen to play football for the Australian juniors. How did that happen?
It was the greatest thing because you got selected.
Yeah.
But the most important person in my life wasn't there. My mum died when I was a young kid.
Oh.
So by the time I could fly and really show people what I can do as a player, the one person I really wanted to be there wasn't there. Mm. So there was this mixed up young boy who would just go and play the best I could, but look in the grandstand or around car parks looking for my mum.
So your sporting break is going to play for Easts. What was that like, moving to the big city?
Well, I think if you were an Aboriginal young footballer in my time, Arthur Beetson was the pinnacle. So to receive a phone call from Arthur Beetson to say, come and play under me, I was on the next plane.
Yeah.
And because it's like a dream to be able to play rugby league on the big stage.
Sydney life? Pretty different from the country. How did that affect you?
Unfortunately, it can have a negative impact on a young boys from the bush as well. If you're not prepared for it, it can take you down the wrong track. At the height of my career, injuries come, and I broke my arm. So you had time when you don't have all those other things. And unfortunately for me, Grog was there.
Thank you.
guy, just be real tough, Shane. Go on now, ride now. Go on, Shane. Go on, Shane. Keep trying it. Keep going. Keep riding. Good, good, good. Keep riding. Keep riding. Keep riding.
What was the pinnacle of your career?
In 1979, I won the Junior Saddle Bronc at the Calgary Stampede in Canada. And yeah, I'd say that that would be the best international event that I'd ever won. And then in 1980, I was runner-up in the same event.
What was your worst moment?
I had a saddle bronc go end for end on me at a rodeo at Alpha. Yeah.
Wow. That means that the horse rolled forward.
Yeah, yes. The first thing that hits the ground is your face. And then the whole horse, you're still in the saddle, the whole horse goes right over the top and bends you back over the saddle, and you know, that saddle hits you across the back, and then the whole weight of the horse comes down on you. It can break your back real quick.
The outcome of all your hard work was actually competing at an international level. What was that like walking out on the London Olympics?
It was amazing. My dream was coming true in that moment, standing on the starting line at my first Olympics, and all the injuries and the heartbreak and the setbacks that I'd gone through, all the disappointments, all the times that I wanted to quit, all the times that I was on crutches, and all the times that I was running in freezing cold water. And continuing to just push on and believe that that one day my chance would come up.
Yeah. You said that missing out on the Olympics caused you to come to personal faith.
Mm.
What was the process in that? What happened?
Yeah, so I was 16 when I qualified for my first Olympics. I was in year 11 at school, and you know, running was who I was. It was, you know, it was everything to me. It was soon after that I'd just been told that I would miss the Olympics through this injury, and a new girl came over. Her name was Lisa, and she sat beside me and she said, "Hey, I just want you to know that I've been praying for you." In that moment, it just really touched me that she had this idea of God, that that she could pray to him for something so trivial as my injury. Even though it was a big deal to me, I thought that God was so far away from it. I didn't realise that he cared. I went to church with my new friend Lisa, and I heard the gospel. I heard about Jesus. After a couple of weeks, I decided that this is what I wanted to live for. I wanted to live for Jesus.
Three people achieving their goals, achieving their dreams, and realizing that's not it, and finding Jesus. Many years ago, I was in that place of saying, where do I go with my life? I was at the Pavilion of Promise in World Expo, for those who are old enough to remember that, and just standing at the end of that going, what's next? I was a fitter and turner, I had my life, I had the things I enjoyed doing, I had everything that was going reasonably well. It was like, what's next? And I remember talking to someone at night, I've got no idea who, I just remember being outside and turning around and looking at my car and saying, that's got to go. That's stopping me. Not just my car, but what that represented. There's times where you need to stop and say, there's things that are stopping us from chasing after God. There's things that are in the way of what he wants to do in our lives. What's that for you? God is a jealous God. But in that, God has amazing dreams for who we are and who we can be. He has dreams for who we are as people. He has dreams of who we are as a church community, as a family. He has dreams of who we can be in spite of what we've done through the years, in spite of the sin in our lives, in spite of the failings in our life. God has dreams for us. God has a plan that he wants to roll out, a plan that is good. What are we holding that stops God's vision for us becoming reality? Let's pray. God, you had a dream. You created us for a purpose.